Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Today we're going to talk about the differences in our field. We got a question from a listener on what are some of the differences in the types of licensure, in what is the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist, all of which are really great questions. So today we thought we'd talk about what the differences are so that you can know if you ever have questions.
And you want to, go ahead, sorry.
Why don't we, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want to explain your field first, since it's the oldest?
Since the question was psychology versus therapy kind of thing, why don't we first start on the broad spectrum of that and then get into specifics with therapy, if that sounds good. So I guess, Taylor, do you feel comfortable explaining psychology versus...
Yes.
That was something you kind of lived.
I have a bachelor's in psychology. I wanted to be a psychologist for a long time. Psychology.
He knows how to BS in psychology.
It's a BS in psychology. Yeah. Oh no, it's a BA in psychology. I lied.
He's a BA in psychology.
Yeah. A badass. Is that what that would stand for? Yep. Bachelor of Arts.
Yep.
Not assery.
this isn't explicit. Don't worry.
So psychology is approaching things from an individual view, generally. Psychology is very heavy into assessment. Generally, psychologists will look at giving measures or assessments to see where an individual is at, diagnosing and giving a path forward for treatment.
And we're talking about master's and PhD level psychology. Bachelor's level psychology does not necessarily go into these things at all. It's more of the study of like how people work and their mental health.
Yeah, there are no practicing master's level psychologists.
Yeah.
Psychologists always have to have a PhD or a PsyD.
Yeah.
A PhD in psychology generally goes more into the research side of things. A PsyD will, there are practicing psychologists that do therapy. One of my favorite professors during my bachelor's was a psychologist. He did therapy and teaching. Generally, psychologists, though, are more on the assessment end of things rather than in the office.
Assessment and academia, I feel like, are too big. Yeah. Which, by the way, sorry, guys, I have a cold, so I got a lovely sounding voice. I took Taylor's turn and he's like sick, but...
I really appreciate that.
I picked it up for you. But no, yes, I think that's an important thing. Actually, in the state of Utah, I don't know about other states, but one of the, I think, the highest percentage of careers that psychology bachelor students go into is actually business. So that's why we're making a differentiation. A bachelor's in psychology, you can do a lot of things with. It actually is a really great degree to go into like business fields because you get to understand people and things like that and understand how that works to be better minded about that. But for those who go into the mental field with psychology, I can't begin to describe how many clients I've had who go into the field of psychology thinking that's therapy and then come to find out they get their bachelor's in it and then they realize, crap, I need to either get a PhD so that I actually can practice and do more assessments, or I got to switch up my career entirely, which we'll talk about the different career majors when it comes to master's programs. But psychology is not a straightforward way to go into therapy. And it's not a straightforward way to be a therapist. And just because someone's a psychologist, that's not the only accredited way. That's a great person who can do assessments and some therapy, but that's not the only, and honestly, probably the not most popular way that people go into being a therapist.
Yeah, that's actually why I ended up becoming a marriage and family therapist, was during the course of my bachelor's, I learned more about the other fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things with psychology, I think that I want to add here is that I will often as a therapist recommend seeing a psychologist for testing when there are, I'm trying to think of the term, if there's any issues with executive function concerns. I use that if we're looking at diagnosing personality disorders, if there's a lot of questions around what's the groundwork. So a lot of times when I've treated people with complex issues, psychological testing can give us a real good idea of the range of what's going on versus just saying, hey, this person is, you know, one diagnosis or another. It can give us a lot more information. It gives you often testing into people, how they communicate. So there's expressive and receptive language. There's how they function with concrete versus abstract things. A lot of information can come from that psychological testing. I like to remember the psychology has a O in it versus psychiatry. And the O is like, oh, that's what's going on. And so when I think of how do you explain the difference between psychiatrist and psychologist, I think of the O, the psychology, and say, oh, that's what's going on. Where psychiatry, we can talk about for a minute, is the medical side, where they're prescribing medications. And this is usually a medical intervention technique that we're looking at, whether it be, they usually work in a hospital setting and or outpatient clinic, those kinds of things. So this is the specialized medical. Instead of just seeing your general practitioner, you would see a psychiatrist for medication.
Yeah, and a psychiatrist is much better at the prescribing end of things than a general practitioner. The general statistic for how much an outpatient general practitioner provider has during medical school is 48 minutes of reviewing diagnoses and psychoactive medication, whereas a psychiatrist does their entire residency specializing in those things. Mm-hmm. And then they continue to get more education year after year. And so a psychiatrist is much better able at understanding what's going on and prescribing better. And so a general practitioner can prescribe things for a mental health condition, but a psychiatrist is much better at it.
You also look with psychiatrists that often can work well with mental health nurse practitioner as well, which can also prescribe things for people and along the same line. Honestly, I need to look more into the definition between psychiatry and mental health nurse practitioner, but if you're looking at more prescribing roles, those would be the ones you would be going under.
So it's the amount of schooling is what goes into it.
So, and my understanding is psychiatry takes longer, mental health nurse practitioner takes a shorter period of time. Both are able to do that function.
Yes.
And mental health nurse practitioner can also give assessments and do therapy technically, but usually they usually stick within the realm of just prescribing.
I guess that would depend on the state then.
Yeah, it just depends on the state.
And I think it's important to know that the amount of training they get to do therapeutic interventions is very low. So
yeah,
as we talk about the different fields, and we're going to go into more deeper, it's about what you get trained in school. And then some people do, you know, in all the fields, you're going to have continuing education. So some people do additional training afterwards and get trained in other things. But I really appreciate that Haley's talking about the amount of training and what's going on and what they're specializing in. I worked in a clinic, an outpatient community clinic, with both psychiatrists and nurse practitioners. And they, for most people, it was, didn't matter whether they saw a psychiatrist or a nurse practitioner.
They were just wanting to be looked at.
Right. I do recommend that if you have gone through a couple medication changes with your general practitioner, that you get on a wait list for a psychiatrist and look for that. Because if you're finding that you're not getting the right interventions, you just want somebody who's a little more educated and knowledgeable about it.
Mm-hmm. And mental health nurse practitioner is great too. So mental health nurse practitioner is different than your general practitioner. So your general practitioner is who you see every year to go check on your heart rate, check on different things.
Do your physical.
Yeah, do your physical. Mental health nurse practitioner is very different in the sense of they're specifically trained. They have the nursing background and degree, which is great. So they have the understanding of general health and knowledge, sometimes more specific in health, depending on what they went into. And then they also have the knowledge of what medications do. So they can order lab work done. They can order testing done. So they're also great for that. they often, I've noticed they tend to have shorter wait times as well. So there's a couple of mental nurse practitioners we here in the office in Utah, we recommend to, we're working to get one in office as well. So, I mean, we understand like the great need of that, but now going past the prescribing and, you know, diagnosis with psychology part, which you do not need to go to a psychologist to get diagnosed. You can have that done in therapy, but we're talking about more lengthy administrating of different kinds of assessments and things like that with psychology. When we're going into therapy, this is the area that I think confuses people, is that psychology is not just where you get therapy done. Therapy really nowadays on the face-to-face interaction with the therapist is done through mainly three general fields. You have a master's in social work, you have a master's in family therapy, and you have a master's in clinical mental health. Okay. So you've got three different areas that are the main areas, from my understanding, I don't think there's any others, where you have therapy being done. Now, I'm mentioning master's because you get your bachelor's, you can get it in pretty much, for the most part, in any of those fields, you have to have it in some sort of mental health field. Social work is the only one I can think of that if you get a social work bachelor's, you just have a one-year program for master's a lot of the time. But the other ones are all two-year master's programs. Personally, I am, and we'll kind of go into it, I'm a master's in social work, but I right now am a licensed clinical social worker, meaning I did a lot of other things on top of that to become an individualized therapist and do supervision and things like that. A master's in social work, I, before that, got my master's actually in sociology, which is like the study of people and groups and trends and like understanding why they do things, different things like that. So I learned about people generally, realized I really can't do much with a sociology degree. You can go into research as a PhD student or in a master's kind of thing. But for the most part, if I want to work with people, I had to switch it up. So social work for me was my area because you can be a therapist, you can be a caseworker, you can be HR actually as a master's in social work. You can be a lot. For me, I liked the availability of all the different things.
Will you talk about the different kinds of social work masters?
Yeah. So some social work masters, they work as a case manager. So DCFS, things like that. When you hear social worker, you think more of like the people coming into the home and assessing if the home is safe. That's not the one I went into, but that is one area. Another type of master's in social work is you can actually do more of a research base, which Brené Brown is actually involved in the PhD in social work when it comes to research base. She researches how people interact with people, what kind of emotions are there. You've heard all of her work. We've talked about it. We've probably, you know, talked about Brené Brown to the point of, you know, the horse is dead now in the back, just same as how we talked about what life coaches' roles are in therapy, which is they don't. But when it comes to master's social work, you can do, yeah, you can do more casework conceptualization, you can do more research, or you can do more therapeutic skills, which in therapy, there's so many different types of therapy you can do. But this is one-on-one therapy. Actually, a fourth one technically is school social work, which is a huge area. I actually do have my school social work license. I keep that updated. I loved being a school social worker in a high school. Was going to go back to that, but then ended up going private practice more. But that's like working as like resources and kind of quick therapy. There's also social workers in hospitals that are there to do assistance with like helping a mental health and receiving services. So there's so many, that's more case management. There's so many areas you can do that when it comes to social work. One of the things I talk to people is unless you have a specific specialty, which Taylor and Jen will talk more about their things. Often when I do therapy for people in college who are looking to get into a field like this, I've had a couple sent my way where I kind of explain it and I'm like, hey, this might be a better field because it's more general. You have a little more availability. You can kind of mix and match things a little bit more. And accreditation is not like it's easy, but it's a little straightforward. So with any of these fields, you graduate with your master's, which you usually have a practicum, which is like an internship. And then after, you have to do about 2 years of supervision where you gain hours working with clients, you gain hours working and like having a supervisor who you come talk to like once or twice a week. You talk about cases, you talk about how you can do better. And then you submit those hours. And then depending on the state, sometimes it's 3 years, sometimes it's two. Sometimes it's 4,000 hours, sometimes it's six, sometimes it's 2,000. It just depends on the state. you submit all the requirements, and then you get your L. And that means you no longer have to be with a supervisor to do weekly check-ins, but everyone talks about ethics of you should still check in with the supervisor. And then you just continue on your way with doing therapy still. And then you can do more specialized, which we've talked about all of our specialties of what we like talking about. So that's like the social work aspect. Social work has been around for, you know, centuries, honestly. One of the bigger social work areas you really hear about is like when the Industrial Revolution was happening, and they talk about like, you know, caseworkers coming and trying to make sure children weren't working too far, you know, too hard in the factories, and that they had a home and they had resources and they'd have like places for the homeless or places for women who needed support. Those were like the first quote unquote social workers, but it's actually been longer than that, that the field of social work has been around.
Goes back to like feudal England, doesn't it?
It goes back to so far. I would even say like Roman Greco times, you hear about like them trying to like take care of their people and populations. And but I think social work is kind of one of the big areas. But that's usually because we have, I think, a bit more organization and a bit more leadership availability. We're usually the ones who are going to Congress trying to pass reform to help people get their basic needs met. The NASW, the National Association for Social Workers, is a huge organization that actually helps other mental health fields as well, but is primarily by social workers. We're the ones who will, like, you know, put money towards different candidates who are going to help reform certain areas or pass certain bills. So you hear social work a lot in the area. And if you hear NASW associated with something, that's who they are. But then there's another area, I think one of the other bigger ones as well, is Taylor's with Masters in Family Therapy. I think when people think marriage and family therapist, they look at that and they go, oh, if I want to work with families, that's the one I have to do. You can do that in all of them, but they have more of their specialty, and Taylor can kind of talk about that.
The reason why I went into marriage and family therapy, like I said, I was working in my bachelor's in psychology. And all of my professors kept talking about, the ones that did therapy, that their client would have an insight, or they would be making progress, and then they'd go back to their family and would get worse, or they'd go back to square one. And I kept having this question of, well, then why aren't you working with the whole family? And so that's why I decided to go into marriage and family therapy. Marriage and family therapy started kind of back in the 1950s. There was a real need for more therapists after the end of World War II. That's when psychologists started doing more therapy, and there still just wasn't enough need. People noticed that there were these trends of maybe relationships are having an impact on people. And so there were people that started interacting more with the family and bringing the whole family in, whether there was just one kid that was having a problem, or maybe it was just the dad that was struggling, but they brought the entire family in, whether the whole family wanted to or not. And that's where marriage and family therapy really began. Marriage and family therapy programs are only ever clinical. There aren't marriage and family therapy research programs. So if you get a master's in marriage and family therapy, it's only ever to do therapy. There aren't other kinds of master's programs. With marriage and family therapy programs, there are very strict requirements of how many hours you need to have in front of a client. There aren't other kinds of hours that count. You can't do what are called professional hours of, you know, research or doing things in your internship site to count. So you have to see so many clients, and half of them, or sometimes more than half of them, have to be with couples or families. And the reason why that's so important is that marriage and family therapists see things from what we call a systemic perspective, which means that we basically see things as no man is an island. So we do individual therapy, but while we're doing individual therapy, we see things in terms of, how is the client in front of me being impacted by people that aren't in session? And how is my client impacting others that aren't in session? So that's kind of what separates our field. The other fields are taught this systems theory as well. My understanding from people I've supervised is that generally it's a few weeks of time of theories, but in marriage and family therapy, every single model of therapy that we're taught falls under this systems umbrella. So that's what separates a marriage and family therapist.
And then we have the third area, which is GENS, which I'll be honest, I hadn't really learned about CMHCs until probably in the last couple of years, meaning GEN, what that means. So Jen, I guess, kind of tell us a little bit more about that area when it comes to therapy.
I think we're definitely the youngest in the field when it comes to licensed professional counselors. And in some states, they go by LPC or licensed professional counselor, or CLPC, which is a clinical licensed professional counselor.
In Utah, for example, that change to CMHC has just been in like the last decade, right?
So actually, yeah. And then Utah, so I'm licensed in multiple states. So in Utah, I'm licensed as a clinical mental health counselor. In Texas, I'm licensed as a licensed professional counselor. So you'll see multiple, I get extra letters after my name just because there's multiple titles depending on this type of degree. But it's it's a little bit different. And even just listening to Haley and Taylor talk about it, I'll tell you kind of what is the basis for professional counseling. So I did my undergrad in marriage, family, and human development. So and you don't have to do it in that area to do an LPC. You need some kind of psychological. So you can do social work as an undergrad. You could do psychology. You could do sociology, and I'll still look at licensed professional counseling as an option. But what happens is that we work in a different framework for education. So I had 2 years of instruction in grad school and then one full year of an internship before I was able to then go towards licensing. So that is the expectation there. And we focus in teaching clinical mental health is the etiology, or how does mental illness develop?
What was that word you used?
Is it etiology?
Ideology?
No. Oh, I just couldn't hear what you said.
Ideology? E-T-I?
Ideology.
Okay, so we focus on the idea. Am I saying that right now?
Ideology, you're okay.
Okay, so we focus on the ideology of mental illness, and we do a lot more information in substance abuse disorder. We focus a lot on diagnosing. So we took probably of all, when I've talked to a lot of people, we took a lot more courses in diagnosing in grad school than some of the other professions that that I've looked at as far as what they were required to do. We also do a little bit of everything. So we do a lot of cognitive behavioral understanding in the training of how does the way we think affect how we're changing behavior. We do kind of that mid-range, so not as much as a marriage and family therapist, but probably more than social work in the systems theory that Taylor had talked about, but a lot of interpersonal and psychodynamic therapy. So what's going on and how did we get to where we came from? So that's one of the things I love about my field is that there's a lot of conceptualization that goes on in understanding where did this come from, how did it develop, and how do we treat it. And then it's interesting because a lot of people will say, you know, what kind of therapy do you want to do? The other thing that you'll see is a little bit different is a licensed professional counselor is focused on treating the individual within their whole community. So where they came from, where they're living and what they're doing. They are not, often people will ask if we prescribe medication. We do not prescribe medication. So that's
psychologists can with additional training depending on the state, but CMHCs, LPCs, social workers and marriage and family therapists cannot.
My understanding is no one with a master's can prescribe any type of medication. Yeah. So just as a heads up, if there's an M in their, you know, in their degree, no, we need a PhD or some sort of doctorate
that's
to go.
Probably not medication. And it's probably not a prescription.
Yeah, just be aware.
Yeah. One of the other things that we specialize in understanding is mood disorders. So that's, it's interesting if you look at what the, what's required to study mental health counseling is, as we do a lot of that. How does mental health develop? What does it look like? And then we specialize in understanding emotional regulation. And those are some of the things that if you look at what the differences are, that that'll be what you get trained in. And then just like every field, it's interesting, you know, we've all been out of grad school for a while and now we do a lot of the same training. So we did EMDR together, we did ART together, we're, you know, so we've taken all these things and it can be really interesting. And I think one of my favorite things is to have the discussions from the multiple perspectives of what's going on. And
that's go ahead.
Well, Haley talked a little bit about even after you're fully licensed, you continue to collaborate, right? So, and I think it's really important that I really love in working with the idea of a multidisciplinary team approach.
Yeah, that's something that, and I think my program was very guarded, very jealously our approach and training. I think they were very zealous about it. They still were very clear about what the research says about the discipline that you seek in therapy, is that it's really ibuprofen versus Tylenol. It doesn't really matter as long as the therapist gets good training and supervision once they graduate.
And it's hard because I've seen really excellent clinicians in all different fields, and I've seen some really horrible clinicians with all different licensures. So it, once we look at whether they're licensed by the state, it really comes down to how do they approach things and what are they working on as far as their individual skills.
Yeah, the most important thing in therapy is that the therapist is a good fit for you, not whether they're a social worker, an MFT, a CMHC. It's do you have a good relationship with the therapist?
Yeah. I think also we talked about supervision. I think it's completely within your area. If you're looking and trying to decide therapy wise, ask them what kind of trainings do they continue to do. Ask them. I've known therapists in the past that pride themselves on how smart they are, but then when you ask them when the last time they did a training, besides we have to do mandatory ones each year, some don't do that because they don't always audit them, and so they try to get away with not doing it.
Yeah, that makes me nervous.
Seriously, it's just not ethical. But ask them what kind of trainings they do, right? What kind of stuff do you brush up on? What kind of stuff do you really like learning about? And I think it's really cool to hear that from clients when they come in and they're like, hey, what kind of stuff do you like excelling in, doing more with, learning more about? And I get excited to tell them like, hey, I love learning different techniques for A, B, and C. And so I, you know, for me, I've gone and taken mindfulness classes. I've gone and learned this for sex therapy. You know, it's just, I think it's totally, when we're looking at all of these different fields, again, it's less about which one and it's more about how's that person taking advantage of that and learning more about it. So I think we really got to go into all these areas and look at really what makes each one. And again, we're not saying this is the be all end all, but this is the general knowledge of it. But yeah, hopefully there aren't too many more questions with that. Anything you guys want to add?
I think that was a great question. Thanks to whoever asked that question.
You know who you are.
You know who you are.
And if you don't,
come talk to us. We'll remind you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We would love to hear from you.